It's 10 o'clock and welcome to Creating the New Normal, Leadership in a Post-Pandemic World. This is Ben Baker and this is Claire Chandler, and we are coming to you live coast to coast. And this show is the fourth in a series. We've been doing this. This is our first live event, but we've been doing these as recorded events every Friday, and they are posted live on this YouTube site. And we're excited about it because our attitude is that we are in this pandemic. We absolutely are in this pandemic, but you know what? We're not going to be in there forever. We are absolutely not going to be in here forever. And it is up to leadership to take a look and sit there and say, where are we now? And where do we want to go? And what is keeping us from getting there? Because as we come out of this pandemic, as we move forward, we need to be able to hit the ground running. And if we're waiting for the world to open up, if we're waiting for all the doors to open up, and we're waiting for government to say we can start business again, we're going to be 3, 6, 9 months behind the game. But if we're planning now, if we're organizing now, that when that day comes, your team will be ready, you'll be ready, your business will be ready, and you'll be able to be the people that people want to talk to. And you're already engaging your clients and you're already getting them excited. So that's what this show is all about. So welcome. Claire, I'm going to pass it over to you.
Sure. And Ben, what a great way to tee this up and kind of set the context. And I think you have absolutely hit the nail on the head. It feels like the world has gone asleep, is sort of in hibernation. And the most powerful positive thing I think about this experience is the fact that, like no other time in any of our lives, this is a globally shared experience. This is something that literally everyone we know, everyone in our family, everyone that we do business with, everyone that we encounter casually is going through this same experience. Yes, from different perspectives, and yes, with different needs, and yes, with different levels of anxiety or optimism about it. But it's a really powerful, inclusive, I dare to say, kind of a bonding experience, right? It's sort of the, where were you in the spring of 2020? What was your life like? And yes, we all have certain restrictions, but there are other things that I think we are learning. And to your point, I think any business, and especially any leader who is sitting back and saying, well, we're all in the same boat and we are all in the same suspended animation, so I'm not going to put too much pressure on myself, my ability to lead my team, mm-hmm. or our company's ability to look ahead, because everyone is sort of, being held back. And I would say if that is a thought in your head, you've got to overcome that. And you've got to overcome that really, really soon, because other businesses, other companies, other leaders are not letting this opportunity hamper their ability to continue to do what they do, to continue to grow, to continue to pursue their mission, to continue to refine their mission, their vision. So I think there is a globally shared experience, there is a very unique opportunity for the right businesses and the right leaders mm-hmm. to do something with this time and not treat it as a pause button. Certainly it's a time for reflection. But if I had one stern warning for the universe out there, it's don't pause too long. Yes, reset. Yes, reassess. Yes, realign. But if you are not recalibrating while you're doing that, you're not going to emerge from this crisis, healthy as a business. So that's a big caveat.
Exactly. I mean, like you, our business is across North America and worldwide. And, I've been dealing with a firm in Australia right now, and I'm really excited about what they want us to do for them. Their leadership contacted us, me and a partner of mine out of Australia. And what they want us to do is to go out there and do an engagement survey to a bunch of their customers to sit there and say, look, what are the challenges you're facing right now? So we're going to do these, you know, these focus groups, these town hall meetings with their clients and find out, okay, what are the challenges you're facing? What are the things that are keeping you from being successful? What are the things that you're being afraid of? And to find out if there's ways that my company, my client, can help their clients succeed. And we're going to do, you know, some engagement pieces. We're going to do some town halls. We're going to do some marketing, some, you know, and a whole bunch of other things. But that's true leadership. It's realizing that by taking care of our customers, by communicating with our customers, by working with our customers, we're going to build that affiliation and we're going to build that loyalty. And it may cost them more in the short term, but in the long term, the dividends will be there because those clients are not going anywhere. They're going to say, listen, they took care of us. They listened to us. They understood us. They valued us through this whole crisis. And because of that, we're going to be loyal to them moving forward. So I think that businesses need to sit there and be creative. And it's not just saying, look at me. It's saying, okay, what can we do to make our clients' lives better? And focus on that, because you may, as a leader, you may sit there and say, you know what? What we're doing right now is not serving our clients. We may need to pivot. You know, we may to sit there and say, okay, we've got the brain trust, we've got the equipment, but we can look at a different way. I mean, in Canada right now, and I don't know in the United States, a lot of breweries have refocused where they're now making hand sanitizer. I mean, that's a brilliant thought process. Alcohol is the main ingredient of hand sanitizer at 60 to 70%. So they're taking those tools and the expertise that they already have and turning around and making hand sanitizer. So that's leadership. And I think that's what we need to focus on, is how can we pivot as companies, as leaders, as, you know, citizens of the world to make this world better moving forward.
It's such a great example. You know, you often hear the term victim mentality, mm-hmm. Used toward individuals who, you know, maybe didn't have the best upbringing or, you know, maybe had tragedy strike, and you have two choices, right? You can play the victim, mm-hmm. and you can say that the world is against me and therefore I'm going to give up because I just can't catch a break. Or you can use that as, you know, steps in your journey and learning opportunities and ways, you know, as individuals to pivot. We don't often use that phrase victim mentality with companies, but the breweries are such a phenomenal example of that creative pivot. In New Jersey, where I am, the microbreweries had been sort of late arrivers in the state for a variety of reasons, but they were finally permitted to kind of open up, and boy, right. And they're everywhere now. Mm-hmm. But they're relatively small. You know, they are just so passionate about brewing beer. My husband and I are extremely passionate about patronizing their establishments. But you know, that is a business that had a golden opportunity to play the victim,
right.
To say, this is going to be, you know, our swan song. This is going to be what is the death knell for our industry or our business, because we're just too small. And they have made this conscious choice to think bigger,
right,
rather than to play small. And it's such a big pivot to go from playing small to thinking bigger and then playing bigger. The distilleries in New Jersey and across the country, the breweries, all of these folks who said, you know what, we could shut our doors, we could lay off everyone, and we can hope that we get out of this cave alive, where we can do something that, you know, that gives back and keeps our business viable. So it's such a phenomenal example of taking what could have turned them into victims of this crisis into an opportunity to rise up and to ascend to a, you know, to a higher form of service delivery. It's such a great example.
Well, you know, we all need to be thinking that way. We all need to be rising up. You know, I had a conversation with a client down in Texas, and they were saying, well, the local market is depressed. There's nothing going on, this and that and everything. I said, well, wait a second. You have a Zoom account, right? Yeah. You have a website, right? Yeah. You can still offer what you offer to people around the world, you are now a citizen of the world. The one thing that COVID-19 and this digital revolution, you know, if we want to call that, is going to do, is it's going to sit there and say, you know what? I can now hire somebody from Texas if I live in New Jersey, or I can hire somebody from Amsterdam if I live in Australia. If it's good to sit there and say, who are the best talent? Who are absolutely the best talent? Who are the people I know, like, and trust? And it doesn't matter if they're, you know, sitting side by side with me, or they're half a world away. If they make it easy for me to do business with them, if they make it easy for me to be a customer, they understand me, they value me, they listen to me, you know what? Why wouldn't I do business with them? It's the companies that are going to sit there and say, how can I make it easy for people to do business with me? How can I take care of people? How can I make sure that it's people first, purpose second, profit third? Those are the companies that are going to succeed. You know, we all need profit. There's no question we all need profit. You know, this is not a communist society. You know, I am a for-profit, you know, corporation, and charge accordingly. But, you know, I truly believe that if we don't have purpose, if we don't take care of our people, and I'm talking internally and externally, we're missing the boat and we're going to be left behind.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, a little shout out to Dave Robins, who just joined us.
Hey, Dave.
Live from Gibson's, British Columbia. So fantastic.
Awesome. Thanks for joining, Dave. Love seeing you here.
Yeah. You know, the word that kind of comes up for me in what you just said is connection, right? Mm-hmm. And that is what it has always been about. When you talk to people about how do they grow their business, how do they gain new customers, how do they get more sales, right? It's not about having the best product or the shiniest brochure. It's about how deeply I can connect to what it is that you truly need, and, you know, and how we can deliver a solution. And I think, you know, to your point, that need that is so essential in businesses to make that connection has gone even deeper and more critical in this pandemic. But I do think, because of the time that we live in, the technology, whether it's, you know, video conferences like we are on right now, or other technology that does make it relatively seamless to connect to someone between New Jersey and Canada, between Amsterdam and Australia, all of those examples. You know, we really do live in an extraordinary time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, we've never seen a pandemic like this. Okay, I get it. But again, I think what we are enabled to do, both through technology and just within ourselves, to, you know, to creatively look at the situation and say, this will not stop me from serving my clients.
No.
You know, I think if you look at it from the right perspective, right, it's the half empty, half full kind of a thing. It's the victim mentality versus the service mentality. You know, it really is a very critical time during this shared global experience to step up your game and to, you know, to think in a different way and to serve on a, you know, on a bigger scale.
Well, it's true. And I take it one step further. I don't think that the glass is either half full or half empty. It's refillable. Mm. And if we take a look at the glass being refillable, the opportunities are amazing. The opportunities are absolutely amazing. When you think about it and sit there and say, okay, just because it's always been this way doesn't mean it always has to be that way. We need to move forward. I mean, perfect example with technology. You and I are on Zoom. I'm in Vancouver. You're in New Jersey. And the world is watching us right now on YouTube. You know, the fact that we can, you know, seamlessly integrate this technology and blast it out to anyone who wants to watch it worldwide is an incredible experience. You know, and they can watch it either now or they can watch it later, and they can rewatch the material. And it's thinking as leaders with that mentality. It's thinking that with the leaders that, what don't I know? You know, because that's the thing is we don't know what we don't know.
Right.
And the more we can ask the questions and say, okay, what am I not seeing? What don't I know? What are the opportunities that I'm just not seeing? And talking to our people and listening to them and sitting there and going, okay, what are you seeing out in the market? You know, talking to our customers, what are your pain points? What are you seeing? what are things that you'd like us to be able to help you with that we're not currently doing? Those conversations are going to lead to some incredible opportunities. And it's a matter of leaders being able to synergize all that, develop a plan, develop a strategy, and then leading their teams forward to be able to be successful.
And, you know, it's all about at the leadership level, at the company level, even for, you know, the entrepreneurial level, like you and I, we have become a community of learners.
Yeah.
Right. And that had been enabled prior to COVID-19 by social media, by technology. I have, since I went from the corporate world into, my own consulting business, 9 years ago now, I have been amazed, pleasantly amazed at the amount of openness and sharing in this network of other entrepreneurs. I really thought going in, it was going to be cutthroat. It was going to be, super competitive. And I think, again, because of the time we live in, and the world that we live in, which, you know, is growing by population, but shrinking in terms of ease of access to each other and ease of connection, there are opportunities for literally everyone if you choose to see them. And so, you know, I think what some leaders who were a little bit slow to that concept have learned through this globally shared experience is no one on the planet has the true answer, the true solution to this thing.
No.
There have been a lot of people that it struck first and they were, you know, caught flat-footed and they had to react. There were others who saw it coming a little bit more and started to prepare, but really didn't know what was going to, stop the lava flow. And we're still learning. And I think, you know, the more there is transparency and learning and an admission that holding back knowledge and holding back lessons learned is a deadly detriment to the entire global community. I mean, you know, we can't overstate that enough, right?
Agreed.
But how that translates into business, where leaders have this community of learning within their organizations. I have seen when I was incorporated, I was in HR and I was running a training department, you know, the drum we were constantly pounding was how do you build a learning organization?
Right.
And we struggled and companies struggled. I think we're almost there now as a result of the pivots that we have been forced into through this global pandemic. It's not just learning organizations anymore. It's learning communities. It's sort of microcosms of teams and employees and leaders and companies and countries coming together to try to solve a universally felt problem through their unique perspectives. I'm an eternal optimist.
Yeah.
Which is not to say I've not had my share of hard knocks and all of that sort of thing, but I do try to look for what are the silver linings, right? What are the opportunities that come out of this? How can we learn? How can we be better? And how can we ensure that we don't repeat this into the past? So this concept of a learning community and this global sort of realization that it took a global pandemic for us to finally get what that meant. But boy, it's beautiful when you see it in action.
Well, it's interesting because I think that every leader, and here's the thing with me, leadership is an attitude, it is not a title. So when I'm saying leaders, I'm talking about managers that actually lead and don't just manage process, but actually lead people and inspire people. You know, directors, vice presidents, executive vice presidents, C-suite, CEOs, whoever, they're all leaders when they're inspiring people, when they're building confidence and trust, and they're helping move the process forward. Those are leaders. But I think that leaders at every level need to find a cadre of people. And it might be a cadre of people within your organization, or it might be a cadre of people outside your organization that you can meet with within a cone of silence and say, you know what? I just don't get this. We're wringing our hands. We're pulling out our hair. We just don't understand it. We're frustrated by this. And somebody within that group has already figured it out, or at least collectively as a group, you'll be able to come up with solutions together to do it. I mean, that's coaching, that's mentoring, that's, you know, that's creating the mindset that more minds are better than one, and putting aside ego and saying, you know what, it's okay not to know. It's okay to be vulnerable. It's okay to be in a position where you don't have all the answers. I belong to this great group that meets every Thursday morning at 8 o'clock on the West Coast. And there's 25 or 30 of us that get on Zoom, and there's expertise from every region. And everybody's sitting there saying, how can we make things better for everybody? You know, everybody chimes in, everybody's listening, everybody's contributing. And the meeting is getting better and better and better. And it's only because there's respect in the room to sit there and say, you know what? None of us have got all the answers. None of us have seen everything. Some of us got a little bit more gray hair than others and have been there through, you know, 9/11 and Y2K and 2008 and, you know, into the 80s and the gas crisis and everything in between. And some of us haven't. But it's that collective knowledge and realizing that good ideas, you never know where they're going to come from. And we all need to be listening to each other and helping each other to be able to move forward.
Yeah. And I could not agree with you more. And I think, you know, that is another positive outcome that this pandemic is forcing among just human beings in general. I mean, if ever there were a time to show vulnerability and to admit that you don't know everything, now is the time. And this ridiculous pandemic crisis that we're in removed that excuse, removed that fear of saying, I truly don't have an answer to this. I don't see the end of the tunnel. I don't know how to get us through that. I'm very hopeful that, you know, this will teach all of us, because I have been victim to this as well, right?
Absolutely.
You know, you're sort of trained, or you're groomed, or you're raised to believe that if you say as a leader, you don't know something, or you admit to a weakness or to a vulnerability, that is a sign of, you know, frailty, or it's a sign of failure. And it's absolutely the opposite. It's absolutely the opposite. And I think, you know, if this, again, experience got people to develop muscles around showing vulnerability, expressing vulnerability, and laying it out there and saying, you know, I know you're vulnerable too. Let's not dwell on what you're vulnerable about. Let's work together to strengthen the community. Because that's truly what this, you know, this has been the global lesson. And I think it's a very big business lesson as well to say, you know, I said out loud finally, and it took a pandemic to do it, to say, I'm scared. I don't have all the answers. I don't know that I'm going to be able to keep the doors open or keep all of my people, and I don't quite know what to do about it. And the sky didn't fall down on me when I said it. It's amazing what happens when you finally admit what everybody around you already knew, which is you're not perfect.
Yeah. And when we do that, when we say, you know what, I don't know, but I'm going to find out. You know, when you say, I don't know, and you wring your hands and you throw your hands up, that does not lead to any trust. That doesn't believe, you know, inspire anybody.
Right.
But when you say, I don't know, but let's find out together, or let's build a task team, find out, or let's go find an expert who really does.
Right.
As a leader, that inspires your team.
Yeah.
You know, it's sitting there saying, it's showing that vulnerability to say, you know what, I don't know everything. But on the other hand, I'm going to go find out, and I'm going to take the time, and I make the effort, I'm going to invest the money to make sure that we have those answers, because those answers need to be found out. And instead of fake it till you make it, which is just not going to work anymore.
Right.
We need to be sitting there going, you know what? I don't know, but I need to find out. And this is important. And it's not a sign of vulnerability. It's a sign of the world has had a pandemic change. You know, our children will be telling the story of COVID-19 to their grandchildren. You know, that's reality. Where 9/11 was for you and I, and we always remember where we were for 9/11, our kids will remember where they were in the spring of 2020 and be able to tell that to their grandkids. You know, and that's how much the world has shifted. And it doesn't matter if you're in Bangalore, India, or London, England, or Vancouver, BC, or New Jersey. You know, we all had similar experiences. They were different. I mean, obviously, you know, New York and New Jersey had far more death and carnage than Vancouver did, but the shared experience of the fear and the unknown and the lack of leadership. And when you finally find leadership that sits there and says, okay, they're doing their best and they're going to make mistakes and they're going to go down the wrong path, but they're going to admit that. And they're going to sit there and say, this is what we learned from it. This is how we're changing. And this is how we're going to move forward. And yeah. I think that there are some great lessons learned. And, you know, I think back to John McCain and Maple Leaf Foods, you know, with the Listeria crisis, where people died because of a Listeria infection. And he stood up day after day in front of the cameras and said, this is what happened. This is what we're doing. This is what we're going to do. And when leaders take ownership and they own the situation, we respect them so much more and we're willing to follow them so much easier.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's interesting, that example, the Listeria example, the 9/11 example, you're right. Some of us were far closer to the impact zone geographically and therefore emotionally and all of that. You know, I saw earlier this week or last week, we're at the 25th anniversary of the Oklahoma City bombing?
Yeah, something like that.
You know, I remember exactly where I was when that news broke, even though I was in New Jersey then and that was in Oklahoma. The thing about those tragedies, those accidents, those terroristic attacks, and it doesn't always have to be terrorism, these devastating, you know, tsunamis.
Any trauma.
Any of that sort of trauma that is globally observed, even if it's not globally experienced, creates this unity, this mm-hmm. we've got your back, we know what you're going through, we are in this together. You know, and as you were kind of talking about the late John McCain, you know, and other things that kind of distinguish where we are in this sort of forced pivot of demonstrating vulnerability, it occurs to me that the greatest leaders I've ever known or studied or had the opportunity to work under, have a skill set that mediocre and otherwise, you know, marginally good leaders don't. And it's the same skill set that you and I as entrepreneurs have had to develop to survive, mm-hmm. which is asking questions.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not, I don't want to say skillful because that sounds too, you know, manipulative, but asking good questions
yeah.
and going deeper on questions. And because, you know, if you go to a run-of-the-mill leader and you say, you know, what kind of questions do you ask your people? He or she is going to look at you and say, well, I don't ask because I'm supposed to have the answers. No, you're not.
No.
If you were supposed to have all the answers, you wouldn't need staff. Mm-hmm. If you could do everything yourself, if you knew all the answers, if you knew how to run a business from every single angle and how to design it, strategize it, build it, and deploy it, you wouldn't need a team. And it would be a hell of a lot easier to run a business if it was just you and, you know, everything was within your control. But the reality is you do have a staff, you do have a team, you do have people to lead, and they have knowledge that you do not. And woe to you if you don't tap into that. And the best way to do that is not to tell them to tell you what they know and download their information, but to ask them, you know, and, you know, to your point about kind of going into your room and saying, I don't know the answer to that, but I'm going to find out. Sometimes it's incumbent upon a leader to say, I don't know the answer to that, and I don't know how to go about finding that out. How do we figure out that solution?
Absolutely.
Right? It's amazing to me what happens, and I've seen it firsthand. When a leader goes to one of their people and asks them, how would you do this differently?
You've empowered them.
I mean, it is an amazing question that a lot of managers and leaders are afraid to ask because they say, well, if I ask them that, I'm going to get a boatload of complaints and a boatload of things that are just not possible. And, you know, I say to those people, how do you know? And, you know, based on what experience, right? Go ask them. They're already here. They're doing a job, but are they truly pouring their best talent, their best effort into it, their best thought? Or have they stopped innovating because you've stopped asking?
Oh yeah. My favorite thing to do is when I had staff was if there was a problem, if people had a problem, my door was always open. But you had to come in with two solutions.
Yep.
You know, you had to come in with two solutions. We could do X or we could do Y. I may not take either. I might take a hybrid of them, or I might suggest, you know, that we augment one of them in a certain way. But at least it gave them the opportunity to know that I was empowering them to come up with a solution, that they, you know, that I was sitting there trying to make them better and trying to get them, instead of them having me be the, you know, all wise, you know, guru on the hill, I was sitting there going, you know what, how would you handle this situation? You work here, you deal with these customers day in and day out, you know them far more intimately than I do. What would make things better for them? And when you empower your people to make those decisions and come up with solutions and, you know, develop their own form of leadership, your team is always going to be better. And that's what leaders should do. They should inspire their teams to be better. They should wake up every morning and say, what are the tools my people need to be more effective today? And I think that that's where leadership needs to go. And I think that that's, as leaders moving forward, I agree with you. We can't know everything. We can't do everything. We can't be everywhere. So we need to empower our people. Command and control, carrot and stick, gone. Forget about it. It's done.
Right.
You know what? There's too much information on the information superhighway. You know, even they just have to go to Glass Ceiling or whatever the website is, or Yelp or whoever, and they're going to know that, wait a second, we're not being treated as well as the company down the street. Why should I be working here when I can go work there?
Right.
You know, if I'm not being treated, if I'm not being valued, if I'm not being empowered, why would I not walk out the door and go somewhere else? And every person that you lose costs you $100,000 to replace.
That's right.
Be a leader.
What's funny is I recently, you know, partly because of this, you know, these restrictions and staying home and all of that, I rediscovered my love for the show The West Wing.
Yeah. I have the whole series on DVD.
Okay. It is, first of all, it is as relevant now as it was 20 years ago when the series was out, and I can't believe it was 20 years. But you know, when I watch those episodes and I watch Martin Sheen as the president, and yes, it's partly idealized, right? Not that he's perfect or does everything the right way, but it's, you know, everything's scripted, obviously. But you know, what that is an amazing illustration of is this is a guy who, you know, the character he plays is, you know, I think he's got a doctorate in economics. He's a highly educated, really, really smart guy, you know, knows his stuff. But you'll notice that he never makes decisions on his own.
Mm-hmm.
He surrounds himself with, you know, the best and the brightest who can advise him. And every time he takes a meeting in the Oval Office, it is some combination of his inner circle and other advisors and the Joint Chiefs of Staff, et cetera, who come into him prepared with information. And they say, here are the facts. Based on my expertise and my role and the accountability that you have instilled in me, this is what I recommend we do. And he takes all of that in, and he makes as informative a decision as possible. And if it's the right one, it's great and he shares the credit. If it's the wrong one, the buck stops with him.
Absolutely.
So, you know, and it just sort of drives home this point that, you know, somebody who is supposedly, you know, the most powerful person in the world, right? At least that's what Americans have the world believe. His decisions are only as good as the information he takes in and he processes and he acts upon. But he is the first to admit that he is not an army of one. He is not a team of one. He is the, you know, the figurehead, the spokesperson, but it is all based on what do the people around him suggest? What do they know? What do they research? What do they stand behind?
Yeah.
And now I'm going to make a decision because I don't have all the answers.
Oh, yeah.
If the president can say, I don't have all the answers, and I'm not just going to go and, you know, in front of a microphone and make it up, and I'm still talking about the West Wing character, not, anyone else, you know, then who among us as leaders would be arrogant enough to say, I don't need to ask anyone any questions. I don't need to admit to what I don't know, because that's not what a leader does.
And let's take that one step further, because I am a West Wing junkie. Let's talk about Ainsley Haynes.
Yes. You know,
Ainsley Haynes was a long-legged, blonde, gorgeous Republican lawyer from Atlanta, I believe from Atlanta, Georgia.
I believe so, yep.
And, you know, totally contrarian to the Democratic agenda, totally contrarian to the viewpoints of a lot of the staffers and the senior staff of the people within the West Wing. But Jed Bartlett, President Bartlett, hired her anyway because he said he liked to have smart people around him.
That's right.
And he said, she's smart people, and she's going to give me a voice and an attitude and a thought process that nobody else in my administration was going to give me. And she ended up being a powerful character because she ended up being that contrarian voice of reason. She wasn't, you say this, I'm going to say that. She's going to say that I serve at the power of the president, and I'm loyal to the president and to the philosophy of the presidency, but I'm going to look at things from my Republican roots, not just drink the Democratic Kool-Aid in every single way, shape, or form. So it's having leaders bring people around them that may be contradictory to their particular viewpoints, that may believe different things that they do. But if you can be constructive and you can have those conversations with these people, you know, that believe things that you would never believe, you're going to be far more insightful and have a far more global viewpoint than if you're just insular and just surround yourself with people that believe exactly what you believe and say exactly what you say.
Groupthink is the absolute death knell of a growing, innovative, competitive company.
Yeah,
there's no question. Yeah, his choice to go out and get her on the team, no matter what objections she raised, was such a great example of, you know, a leadership style that said, I'm going to create an environment where sometimes I'm going to yell and scream because I so passionately believe in my position or what I want to do, but I'm going to create this environment where you can come back at me if you passionately believe a different position. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's an episode where Jed Bartlett isn't, you know, having a West Wing moment and you know, yelling. But it's such a well done show and well drawn characters. But the analogy of that, the metaphor of that for modern day leadership of surrounding yourself with people who are strong-willed, have opinions, will share them, and report to somebody who says, not only should you share them, if you sit quietly and you don't step up and speak up,
you're of no use to me.
That's correct.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, that is the leadership culture that we need moving forward.
Yeah.
Is that good ideas can come from anywhere. I'm going to listen to all opinions. Ultimately, the buck stops here. Ultimately, I'm going to make the decision. Ultimately, I'm going to gather as much information as I can, and I'm going to make as an intelligent decision as I can moving forward based on the information that's put in front of me. But I'm not going to ignore a piece of information just because it doesn't meet with my particular agenda. And I think that great leaders now and moving forward need to have that philosophy in order to be successful, because, you know, group, as you said, groupthink, or as Dave Robbins was saying, is silos. You know, having that whole silo mentality.
Dave, don't get me started on silo mentalities. I completely.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I can tell you some great stories about silo mentality, and you know, it's looking at things in a way where it just doesn't make any sense. I mean, here's a perfect example. 25 years ago, I worked for Kinko's Corporate. So my job was to handle all the corporate accounts in you know, Western British Columbia. And once a year, Kinko's brought 800 sales guys and 800 operations managers to a central location for a 3 or 4 day conference. And sometimes we were all together, and sometimes the sales guys were in one room and the op guys were in another room. And this was a particular time where we have 800 people. We have a, think of this, we got this huge ballroom with a dividing wall down the center. And the sales guys are on the room to the right, and the ops, the guys and girls were on the room to the left. And we're hearing value, sell value, build relationships, trust, all the things that go along with sales. And, you know, and halfway through the meeting, I say that, but I say, okay, I got to go to the bathroom. I went out, I went to the bathroom, I came back. I went, you know what, just for interest, I'm going to sit in on the manager's, you know, conversation and see what's going on. Well, from their point of view, it was hammer them on costs, you know, reduce costs. And it was a completely different mindset, a different set of culture. And you wondered why the sales guys and the ops guys within the organization hated each other because we were being compensated differently. The theories we were being told are differently. The way we should treat customers are differently. The way we should treat staff is different. And because of that, there was this huge dichotomy, this huge rift. And, you know, the organization obviously split apart because, you know, Kinko's was ended up by being bought out by FedEx. And I'm not even sure it exists anymore. But organizations need to have one central voice. This is our culture. This is who we are. This is our purpose. This is how we treat our people, because you have one job as an organization, and it's take care of the customer. And when organizations and leaders focus their people on serving the needs of the customer, that's when success will really happen. When they're focused on my team is bigger than your team and my budget is bigger than your budget, and my department's more important than your department, the customer loses and eventually the company loses.
Right. And you know, over time, the siloed thinking, the siloed mentality, the siloed management of companies does not happen overnight.
No.
There is no one that I know who has built a business who started by putting pillars in the ground with big columns and said, okay, we're going to pour finance into this one and this division into that one. And, you know, don't ever rise up unless, you know, you just need a drink of water. But other than that, don't consort with those people.
Don't talk to them.
Yeah. I mean, it happens over time. And I think one of the main reasons that happens is companies lose sight of the horizon. Mm-hmm. They say, you know, and it creeps up on them, because all of a sudden they're reporting their results quarterly, monthly, whatever. And then they get enamored with, we didn't make as much of a profit as we wanted to, or we lost a top performer, or, you know, customer complaints are rising. So we're going to go and, you know, look at those lagging indicators, which are the problem.
And whose fault is it?
And whose fault is it? And how do we go back and put a Band-Aid on the problem? These are companies that have lost sight of the horizon they're trying to get to. If they ever had one in the first place, right? The, you know, you talk about the culture and you talk about, you know, we're going to have one voice and one, you know, philosophy around who we serve and how we serve them. And they have to, you know, not to echo Simon Sinek, but he's dead on right about this. You have to start with the why. Mm-hmm. Where are we heading? Why are we even, you know, endeavoring to do this? And the more clearly you can see the horizon as a leader, and the more clearly you can express that to your people in such a way that it resonates for them and their own internal guidance system. First of all, your culture is stronger because you build it around that. And it makes decisions a hell of a lot easier, because now they are not about, well, is that going to fix the financial gap that we had last quarter? Now it's around, does this move us closer to where we said we wanted to be and why we are in existence in the first place?
Right. No, absolutely. And I think that organizations need to reevaluate their culture on a regular basis. And they need to sit there and say, what are the things that are keeping our culture from succeeding? You know, who are the people that are keeping their company from succeeding? What are the processes? What are the procedures? What are, you know, what is the dynamics that are keeping our people from proceeding? And a lot of it comes out to do with how you hire people, how you onboard people, the brand story you tell people. And I think we'll get into the brand story in a different episode, but, you know, because I think that's a really a conversation on its own. Yeah. But, you know, we need to stop thinking about, you know, mission, vision, and value statements as a nice to have, and something that has to be ingrained in every single person and has to be lived on a daily basis. And with that, I think you're going to be able to break down silos, and I think you're going to be able to build a stronger culture, and you're going to be able to create opportunities for organizations to stop focusing on internally and pointing fingers internally and sitting there going, it's their fault. You know, marketing hates ops and ops hates, you know, marketing, and they both hate sales. The question is why? What's creating the communication rifts that's causing this? What are the procedural things that are happening within the organization that are causing this animosity, causing this mistrust, causing things to not run as smoothly as they do? And that's leaders' responsibility. Responsibility is not to sit in your office and in front of your computer all day and analyze charts. Your job is to sit there and say, what are the factors that are keeping our people from being the best that they can be and treating the customers the best that they can?
Right.
And if that means, sitting in on, customer service calls, sitting in on marketing meetings, sitting in on, going out on sales calls with salespeople, actually going to trade shows and standing on the show floor and having conversations with actual clients, God forbid. That's what true leadership should do.
Yeah. You know, in that last 90 seconds or so, anyone who is watching this and who watches the recording, go back to the beginning of that 90 seconds, because the four or five questions that you just asked, the way you asked them in the beginning, and then you've added to them with some really good questions. Any leader who says, well, I'm not good at asking questions, I wouldn't know the right questions to ask, put those on a post-it note, put them in your pocket, and walk around and ask those very questions. And don't just bring your leadership team out of their silos, although that is a great first step to get them out of their silos and really dig into those questions. But have those people, those leaders, walk around. I'm a big advocate of having walk around questions for mm-hmm. leaders. I work with a lot of leaders to sort of equip them with that. And they're not all cookie cutter, but there are some powerful ones that are universally applicable, and you nailed those. So I think, anyone watching this, and I'm certainly going to do it too, rewind to that section and those four or five questions, put them on an index card in your pocket and have them, because they are going to open such dialogue in a way that is going to remove barriers, increase collaboration, and turn on the innovation that so many companies have kind of stepped away from.
Yeah, it'll be about the 42-minute mark, I think. Okay. If I'm guessing correctly, it'll be about the 42-minute mark. So, thank you. I just, certain things just riff off your head.
You kind of added to them and then sort of tied in the, what are we doing that is causing this mistrust? And those are important things to analyze as well. But the way that you phrased the beginning ones, they were more open-ended and they were more hopeful. Yeah. In terms of sort of a, kind of tapping into the creative juices of the employees, because they have that creativity and they want to tell you how you can do a better job leading them. But if you focus them on how we as a business can better serve the clients and customers we were put on this earth to serve through this business, that's going to tell leaders how to lead them. Because if they can consolidate and unify around that vision, in a way that is built up organically and in a way that every person on the team can embrace, can relate to, and can see how they contribute to it. Boy, there's really nothing a company cannot,
And to further that, there's no one way to lead. There's mm-hmm. absolutely no one way to lead. There are ways not to lead. But there is no one way to lead, and you need to really have a pulse of your organization. Understand who are the people within your organization. What do they need? What employee X needs is not the way employee Y needs, and division X may not look at things the same way as division Y do. Head office versus branch offices, office employees versus home employees. We need to look at this thing as not a cookie cutter. but as a way of sitting there going, okay, these are human beings. And each human being has their own thoughts, needs, desires, you know, fears. And how do we relate to them? And a great leader equips their leadership at all levels to be able to lead their teams. Because as we said at the very beginning, you can't do it all. You can't be everywhere. You can't do everything. So a great leader provides their people, the next generation of leaders, with the tool set that they need to become better leaders. And that's, you know, that's my mandate. That's my mantra, is to allow us to developing the leader in you and create, you know, create the opportunities where we can develop the leader in you at all levels, because, you know, we need to learn how to lead. You know, yes, there are innate leaders. Yes, there are people out there that are naturally more inclined to lead than others. But even those people who are naturally inclined to leaders can always be better leaders.
That's right.
You know, we can always be better. We can always be looking and say, oh, I did that really well, but how could I have done it better? And it's not beating yourself up. It's looking for opportunities to sit there and say, that was great. That was awesome. We had a great meeting. You know, we did really, really well this quarter. That's phenomenal. Let's celebrate it. But what could we have done better? And how do we take this to the next level? And how do we make people even more excited? And that's how companies elevate. By right. celebrating the wins, but also taking a look at the failures and say, you know what? Those were cool too. You know, those failures allowed us to be better moving forward. So let's not point fingers and blame people. Let's sit there and say, okay, what are we learning from this?
And you learn more from your failures than you do from your successes.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think, you know, to your point, a lot of companies, again, this doesn't happen from the outset, but over time it kind of creeps in, is this culture of either blaming or putting the failures behind us as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. And if you don't take the time to say, you know, yes, it is absolutely important to celebrate the victories and, you know, and give recognition to that, it is equally important to get together, not in a blaming way, but to say, okay, we just had a failure. Cool. You know why that's a good thing? Because those are our greatest opportunities to learn and to get better. So let's get around, you know, a table, a room, a video conference, whatever it is, and let's pick apart how that was a failure, not blaming others, but how, what we're going to learn from that and what we're going to do better next time.
Because you're pushing the envelope.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And too many companies, you know, shove that under the rug. And leaders are not perfect.
No.
Ed Bartlett is not a perfect president. He does not make, you know, he did not make every decision flawlessly, even armed with the best information from the greatest minds he could surround himself with. There were still, you know, things in every episode that didn't go smoothly, that didn't go right.
Right.
And it's a matter of, you know, not hiding from that, but acknowledging, hey, we're not going to get everything here perfect. But what we are going to do is keep our eyes on the horizon and, you know, lean into, not create opportunities for failure, but lean into those times when we have fallen short and say, what did we learn from this? And how do we come back stronger? And, you know, the companies, a lot of companies talk a real good game about having a high tolerance for failure. I have not come across many companies who advertise that and brag about that, who actually walk that talk. And it's hugely important to the growth and innovation of the company.
And if you're saying one thing and doing another, think about how that's frustrating the people inside your organization, how it's demotivating them, how much they become disengaged, how much less they care about your organization. If you're constantly saying one thing, and when the rubber meets the road, and you say, you know what, we celebrate failures and we work together and we build these things together, and then all of a sudden the finger comes out and it points at you.
Right.
And it says, it's your fault.
Right.
That's demoralizing.
Yep.
And people around that person go, okay, if the finger's going to point at them today, could it be me tomorrow?
Right.
And it's not just that one person becomes demoralized. It's not that one person becomes disengaged. It could be a department. Or it could be a division, or it could be the entire company, because people talk. And, you know, we need as organizations to sit there and say, this is who we truly are. This is what we're really about. This is what we're willing to stand for. And this is what we're willing to fight against. And this is how we're going to live our lives day in and day out. And we're not going to be perfect. And we're going to make mistakes. And we're going to learn from them and move on. But this is the goals. And these are the things that we want to have the company built on. And if we can actually do these things and create a culture that we can actually live and actually succeed in doing, it may not be a lot of things, but if you can do those things and do it well, people will, the great minds will flock to work for you.
That's right. And you know, there is good news and there is bad news in that story, right? The bad news is when there is a conflict between what you say as a leader and what you actually do, right? What we advertise is our culture and what the culture in fact is.
Yeah.
It is in, you know, it is human nature to follow the action, not the words, right? To dismiss the words if they are in conflict with the action.
Yeah.
So, you know, the common saying lately, at least in the States, is don't watch what he says, watch what he does.
Yeah.
Right. And that
holds, and that's any leader.
And that's any leader. The good news is, as much as it is in our human nature to you know, when in conflict, dismiss the words and follow the actions, it is also human nature to want to solve problems.
Mm-hmm.
And every employee, if you present something as this is a collective problem that we all share, and it's holding back our ability to grow, or your, you know, by extension, our employees' ability to, you know, to advance and learn and all of that, but it's a problem that we know we can solve, that's going to tap into, you know, my human nature as an employee to, you know, to step up my game and to be creative and to figure out a way around it and to work with the people around me to in fact do that.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, companies that tap into their employees' innate ability and desire to solve problems get farther ahead. And what better time than during this, you know, self-imposed kind of restrictive mode, this is an opportunity for self-study. This is an opportunity for pruning what does not work, pruning what does not serve your company and your clients and the people that you employ, and in getting stronger, because I guarantee you, your competitors are doing exactly that.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a phenomenal place to end, because, you know, we've been riffing on this for about an hour, and we had some incredible things.
Dave, what are you doing later?
Dave, we need to have you out for a drink afterwards with this. I love your comment on Brian Scudamore and his new book, 1-800-GOT-JUNK. You're absolutely right with that. Read the comments. Dave's been really insightful. If you get a chance to read through this and, you know, read all the comments that went along with this, it's awesome. Everybody, thank you very much for listening into this. Whether you're listening to this live, whether you'll listen to it later, whether you record it, whether you send it off to somebody, you know, if there's any way that Claire or I can be of help to you, get in touch with us. You know, we'll put our information in the show notes, but you can get in touch with me through yourbrandmarketing.com. And Claire?
You can reach me at claire@talentboost.net.
There we go. So it's Ben@yourbrandmarketing.com or claire@talentboost.net. You know, get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to help you out. So thanks a lot for being part of the show. Thanks for joining us, and join in every week. We're going to be doing these as recorded the first few weeks of the month, and the last week of the month, the last Friday of the month, we're going to do it live. So we're looking forward to having you.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Dave.